everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast. Folks, summer is nearly at an end, but it is time for us to experience one more hot night in the city of Los Angeles as we watch Predator 2, the second of our Predator films, as part of this month's Watchcast offering. And I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, a movie that everyone on this podcast probably likes at least a little bit less than Predator 1. Am I right, Vinny Caravella?
More like Hot Nightmare, man.
Okay. Predator. Yeah, you might want to workshop that one a little bit.
Predator, more like shit movie.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. It's almost wordplay. Brad Shoemaker. Yeah.
I don't know what y'all are talking about. I had a high old time watching this movie.
Did you have a high old time? Or did you have a high old time?
Okay, left to interpretation. But
fair enough.
There's something here.
There's something here. I don't know if that thing is good or not, but Dan Reichert, I mean, I'm curious. You're a Predator super fan. You love Predator. What did Predator 2 do for you?
I love Predator 1. I have not seen Predators or The Predator, and I thought I had seen Predator 2, but watching it, I'm pretty sure I saw like the last 20 minutes on USA in like 1992 or something like that.
That would
like
be the place to see it, yes.
Yeah, because I didn't remember anything leading up to the cryo room, and then I kind of remember Gary Busey and some stuff at the end. So I definitely have not seen this until now. So coming in fairly fresh.
Yeah, Gary Busey's Gorilla Ghostbusters team fucking going in there.
Who was it? Was it somebody here that described this movie before I saw it as basically a comic book movie? Or did I read that somewhere else?
You may have read that somewhere else. Okay, like what in what context do you mean?
I didn't know this was before I had saw it, but I was reading about it and someone had described it as, yeah, it's basically a comic book movie. And
I think
going
I read
in
that
with
too.
That mentality.
Yeah, totally.
I have no idea where I saw that, but going
I think
in
it was like maybe
that
the director or something, because maybe we were reading the Wikipedia or something and someone's like,
maybe
I love it. It's a big, dumb comic book movie. Yeah, yeah.
Like knowing that it was going to be dumb as hell, I think allowed me to enjoy it a lot more.
It's more like it's almost like somebody made a movie of an NES game. Like if the game Predator game had come first, then they're like, we got to figure out how to make a movie adaptation of an NES Predator game. This is what would come out of I'd say Super Nintendo, because
there was a Genesis
90s.
Predator 2.
There was
game.
A Genesis version of this movie.
Okay,
yes.
So. If the game came first and then they had to make the movie of it, that's what this, it's got some. Man, I don't know, something about this movie. It's got some Mad Gears late 80s, early 90s.
Oh yeah.
Fucking blights.
Dude, I mean, am I jumping the gun here? I mean, first of all, that fake out with the jungle at the very beginning, like immediately told me what I was about to
That's
see.
Pretty
like,
good,
oh
though. That's pretty good, right?
This Which movie is barely a fake out because I'm like, I know that area. I've driven up those hills before. I have hiked up there. That is not jungle. That is fucking Southern California.
And what year did this come out? It was like late 80s?
1990.
This is like right around. So this has got like, this is the exact same like America's Cities are War Zones shit from RoboCop, except like kind of played more straight and seriously.
Now, was this during like I don't really know the timeline, like the LA riots and stuff. Was this in response to that, or was
this,
that was
this
later?
Is previous
right?
to that,
that was like
yeah,
91,
the LA riots
92.
Were later.
Okay, because I was gonna say I thought that was like a couple years into it, and so what is this? Is this commentary on anything that was actually happening during this time period?
Commentary as a word is really giving a lot of what this movie is doing too much credit, but I will say so. This is the era where Hollywood had moved from New York is a crime-scorched hellscape to Los Angeles is a crime-scorched hellscape.
John Carpenter told us that story, of course.
Yeah.
You go from
well,
New
yeah,
York
but
to
the
LA.
Thing is, like, Escape from LA didn't even come out until like 95, I think, or something. So, like, it hadn't taken full cultural hold yet, but like stuff like gangster rap and sort of like the, you know, the scaremongering around LA street gangs.
Morton Downey Jr. was he a part of any of that?
I mean, so Morton Downey Jr., which we'll get to in a minute here, but yes, he was sort of like, you know, one of the originators of trash talk show TV, and his hard copy thing that he's doing in this movie was not really what he did exactly, it was more of a Jerry Springer kind of thing, but yeah, like, it was definitely that sensationalized like, look, you know, gangs are rampant, crime is everywhere, the cops are fucking well, the cops are militarized, but, like, you know, at this point, they extra militarize them because this is the far-flung future of 1997.
Yeah. I went into kind of a rabbit hole here because, like, I knew of Morton Downey Jr., A, because of Mario, B, right. because of Mad Magazine, because I was subscribing back then, but I knew nothing about the news, and C, WrestleMania, where Roddy Piper sprayed him with a fire extinguisher. So, like, I was aware of the existence of Morton Downey Jr., so when he popped up, I was like,
Trinity.
So when he popped up, I was like, I recognize that guy. What's that? What's his deal? And I had to look him up. Yeah.
You've just pinpointed something incredibly specific to our micro generation, the one that the four men of this podcast belong to, is that if anyone of our age group at that point did know who Morton Downey Jr. was, it was from Predator 2, Mad Magazine, or that Roddy Piper bit. Yes. That's it. None of us were watching that show.
I think
Mad
you smoked a lot of cigarettes. Yeah.
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 I knew of the show, and I knew that it was, like, you know, loud and obnoxious and brazen, but, like, yeah, I was too young to, I think, understand. I don't know what Morton Downey Jr. was getting so angry about.
Was he like a Rush Limbaugh type?
Yeah, I thought Jerry Springer was the apt comparison. Like, in my addled childhood mind, I remember Jerry Springer taking up the Morton Downey Jr. But with Morton Downey Jr. with a little more of an MTV edge to it, like a little more, you know.
Yeah, Morton Downey Jr. is your parents, Jerry Springer.
Hang on. Morton Downey Jr. died 20 years ago?
Oh my gosh. From, like, wasn't it like lung cancer? Like, because he was a chain smoker, right?
Oh, that's terrible.
He was a guy who literally went out there and said, smoking's cool as shit, everyone should do it, until he got lung cancer. And it was like, actually, this is bad. We should look into this.
Oh, that's dark.
And this is dark, but also he was an asshole. And, yeah, like, he did a lot of real assholeish stuff.
I mean, I've seen him in this movie. It's got, oh man, this fucking movie. This movie has every cliche from movie making from 1983 and a half to 1997 is in this movie.
Yes.
And I will cite the part where Morton Downey Jr. gets punched and then there's a shot on the camcorder rocking back and forth of him on the ground knocked out. That is, like, also in the cliche bucket. Like, if you're picking things off the bingo card for, like, action 80s movie, that is one of them.
But you just described the best cliche they use. Like, all the other ones are middling to bad, mostly.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, this movie. How did this movie get made, Alex?
How did this movie get made?
I'm gonna play Alex's role for just a second here and say it was written by the same brothers who created the original movie, so...
Impossible.
It was, yes. Jim and John Thomas, they were pitched on doing a... I mean, the reason this movie happened is because Predator was very successful. It was kind of a slow burn in the box office originally, but it made a ton of money and did very well on home video. So, you know, Joel Silver and the rest of the producers were like, we're going to make a sequel. Let's get Jim and John Thomas again. Let's see what do they have. And they pitched them on like six ideas originally. And this was the one they liked the most, which was described as putting the creature in an urban jungle.
Literally.
Yes.
Let's just do everything I say, but literally.
When they signed off on this, they developed the script in about 3 weeks, and boy howdy does it show. I mean, they did some work after that, but the idea and the basic concept of the movie was conceived in about 3 weeks.
Brad, what are those AIs that can make a painting when you say, like, David Bowie on a pigeon? And it, like,
oh yeah, any of the Stable Diffusion or Midjourney or...
Yeah. So that's like, this movie is that, but for 80s movies, like 80s action movies. I'm like, Predator 2 in LA, and it spit this whole movie out from start to end. Like, that's like,
I think, is this the one that has the tagline, he's in town with a few days to kill?
Yep,
because
absolutely.
If so, that is actually one of the greatest taglines of any movie of my generation.
It's pretty good.
It's just a bad movie to attach it to.
Oh, see, on the Wikipedia, it says, the main Predator was designed to look more urban and hip than its predecessor. So when I think hip.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a cool guy right there.
Yes. Well, the idea was that they wanted a Predator that obviously looked like came from the same species, but was an individual. They didn't want every Predator to look identical the way that, like, the Xenomorphs kind of do and that sort of thing. Like, they're individuals. They have their own trophies. They have their own decor. And this one was meant to look more urban. You can translate that however the fuck you want, but I think you could probably read between the lines there.
Anything else that stands out in before we take it to this movie? Because there's a lot to go over here.
I mean, this one doesn't have, like, a huge storied history, but there's a few things here. The director here is Stephen Hopkins, And I'm going to name some movies here, and you can tell me if you've ever seen another Stephen Hopkins movie, because these are the only ones any of you would have possibly seen.
Okay.
This first one is the movie that apparently landed him this role, because Joel Silver had just worked with him on this. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Never seen any of them.
I saw Dream Warriors. That's four.
I also have not. Yes. Should we watch some Nightmare on Elm Street? I have not seen.
I would do it. I haven't seen Friday the 13th
either. There's three good, like, old Nightmare on Elm Street movies. The Dream Child is not one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe that. I'll just mention real fast. Like, Nightmare on Elm Street is, like, the epitome of the horror movie series I was fascinated by at the video store, but I wasn't allowed to rent.
Same. Right. And that I experienced through Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are not as scary as maybe you thought they were when you were a child, but, you know, they're fairly gory by the era standards. Yeah, still pretty gross. Vinny, I made you edit all those, remember, at screen?
Yes, I was genuinely scared of those as a kid, and you made me, like, frame by frame through those movies, which actually helps because you see all the puppets and dolls.
It disabuses you of the notion that any of this is really that terrifying. Other movies made by him in the ensuing years following Predator 2, Judgment Night.
Nope.
Okay.
Heard of it.
As in the Emilio Estevez movie that has the all-time rap rock soundtrack. Okay, no, none of you have seen that. Judgment Night is not a great movie, but it has a great soundtrack.
I think I have seen it, but I couldn't. I think maybe I get it mixed up with Trespass, which is a different movie.
Trespass is a much better movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Blown Away, the Jeff Bridges, Tommy Lee Jones, IRA, Boston bombing thriller.
Now, that's not the one. No, I'm thinking of the one with Arlington Road is what I'm thinking of.
That is also a much better movie than the one I just described.
That's Tim Robbins and Jeff Bridges, right? And also about bombs around the same period. Yes.
No, this is the one where Tommy Lee Jones plays an ex-IRA bomber who comes to Boston to extract revenge on his ex-IRA friends, including one that is now a cop in Boston, played by Jeff Bridges. And Tommy Lee Jones spends half the movie listening to U2 because he's Irish.
Got it.
I've not seen that.
Got it.
How bad are the Irish accents in this movie?
Varying, like, I would say none of them are good, only a couple of them are truly execrable, and Jeff Bridges is pretty fucking bad. The last one I will say here, one of the more expensive flops in 90s film history, the Lost in Space reboot from 1998.
Or 98 with Gary Oldman?
Or 97, 98, yeah.
Seen it.
Saw that.
It's not good.
Seen it because it came free with our DVD player.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I think we got Twister and Lost in Space with ours.
I don't know why I had a fit of, like, that movie is on a friend's Plex, and I just ended up watching the first hour of it a few months ago for some stupid reason. It's bad.
It's pretty fucking bad.
the CG in particular is astonishingly bad.
So I'll just say real quick here, eventually went on to do some TV stuff as well. He directed the pilot of 24 and, like, 12 episodes of 24.
Oh, so he's a genius.
I could see it.
Well, the thing is, I think he might have been better suited to television because, again, this is the string of movies I just described were the biggest movies he made. And this guy, I feel, is a little bit emblematic of the fact that if you were, like, a just talented enough white guy in the 90s, you could really churn out some garbage for a while at fairly high budgets as long as none of it lost a lot of money. And I feel like Lost in Space is the one where he finally flew too close to the sun.
Does he do anything nowadays?
More TV directing, it seems like, so that's fine. A couple of alternate casting possibilities here I'm going to throw you in the initial run here. Harrigan, the lead character that is played by Danny Glover, the initial idea was Patrick Swayze.
Oh.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I could see it, but it would have been an even worse movie.
Definitely.
But he doesn't do a lot of, like, action, like, even in, like, Point Break, probably his most, like, action-y big movie. He's not a traditional, like, action star cop type character, you know what I mean? Like, I don't picture Swayze as the detective on the case or anything, you know?
No, definitely not. And even weirder, and there's reasons why they didn't go this way, but they talked to Steven Seagal about also playing this character, and
I could see.
So he came back and he was like, well, I have some ideas for the character, and can you imagine what those ideas for the character might be?
Hmm.
He's a chef.
Is he good at martial arts?
Yes, that's one of them.
Oh, okay.
The other one was that he was a CIA operative instead of a cop.
Okay.
Okay.
And they were just like, that's not the movie we're making, so we're not going to do that.
In a movie where the tension between the local police and federal authorities is, like, central to the entire story.
That tracks with when he showed up at SNL and had all these ideas for sketches and was adamant that they do them, and they were like, he was the worst host we've ever worked with.
Yeah. And also at one point in the script, Schwarzenegger was supposed to return. Like, the initial pitch for this movie was Schwarzenegger teaming up with Harrigan somewhere in the middle to end of the movie and them taking on the Predator together, but there was a salary dispute that nixed that idea pretty quick.
I'm kind of glad he wasn't, because it makes that first one more special.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm with you.
There's a quick shot in toward the end when they're in the you know, sort of the camera trailer that the government people have, where you can see footage of a debrief scene with Anna. Like, she's there sitting, like, just kind of staring at the camera and talking to someone with no audio. I'm wondering if, like, they had some sort of, like, Sarah Connor-esque, like, you know, hey, here's your big, you know, like, talk to the person who saw the Predator the first time scene, and they just didn't do it. But there's a little footage of her in there.
Okay.
They also mentioned Dutch, not by name.
It was, like, 10 years ago in Central America or something.
10 years ago,
I'm sorry, did you mention this just now, that the Gary Busey role is intended as a stand-in for Dutch?
No. I didn't actually realize that. Is that true?
That's what Wikipedia says. In describing Special Agent Peter Keyes, the character is a replacement for Dutch, the protagonist of the first film after Arnold Schwarzenegger declined to reprise the role.
Oh, was he
just slot out Arnold, bring in Busey, no one notices? Yeah.
But
same
that's
thing.
They must have rewritten that character substantially, because there's no way that, like, they're having like Schwarzenegger be kind of a bumbling, you know, careerist asshole.
Right. Oh, no. Yeah. I would guess the similarity is that he's the character who is obsessed with catching the Predator.
Sure, that makes sense.
Hunting the Predator.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and otherwise, it's a pretty straightforward, you know, casting. And I would say this is a definite who's who of actors, you know, like, actors you've heard of, good character actors from the 90s, and people who are maybe, like, a little too good to actually be in this movie. I'm looking at you, specifically Bill Paxton.
Yes.
You are giving so much more energy than this character actually deserves.
But he's always so fucking good in those roles, even if it's, like, a two-second thing like the first Terminator. Remember, he's actually in Commando for literally, like, 3 seconds. Like, anytime he just pops up in an 80s or 90s movie shortly, I'm just, I love everything he does.
This movie is really reinforcing my policy of just going into these movies not looking at the cast list, because every time it's like somebody like him pops up on screen, I get excited. But is there something about Bill Paxton's delivery that sounds like he is ADRing everything in
the
every
whole
movie
thing
ever?
Sounds,
a lot of, well, this movie sounds ADR'd.
This one particularly sounds
like Titanic is the same way. I'm trying to think of other stuff he is in. Just every time he says a line, it sounds
Aliens.
Like he's recording it in a booth. I don't know what it is.
You can just have one of those voices.
This one sound loop for sure. Like, everything about his delivery sounded, well, I mean, A, his lines are terrible, but B, his like, the audio track sounded like it was recorded on, like, 2 months later.
Yeah. Is there anyone else from the cast here that anyone recognizes or, like, doesn't necessarily know what they're from?
Well, Maria Conchita Alonso from Running Man.
Well, no, mm-hmm. Okay, you say from Running Man. I say from Vampire's Kiss. That's Alvin.
Vampire's Kiss, is that the,
Cage
one? Wait, she's in that?
She's the lady that he's tormenting throughout that movie. That's Alva.
Does she look totally different in that?
She looks a little less momish than she does here. Okay. But other than that, like, pretty much, I mean, she made Predator 2 right after Vampire's Kiss.
It's almost like we were drinking 40s while we watched that.
We might have been, yes. That is possible.
Okay. I'm looking at pictures now. I remember this now. Okay, yes, Running Man and Vampire's Kiss.
But yeah, also, like, we've got Ruben Blades, who is a fairly major character actor of the 90s as Danny Boy.
Mm-hmm, Danny Boy.
We have Adam Baldwin from, you know, Firefly and Serenity, and also...
Like, very, very young Adam. That was the one when he popped up at the credits. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Isn't he in Independence Day, too?
Yes. Yes, he has a small bit in Independence Day as one of the military guys. And Robert Davi, who I'm only mentioning because I was in a band with a guy who claimed that Robert Davi was a distant cousin of his.
That's such Robert a weird Davi. Claim.
He's a brother from the Goonies. He's in a bunch of stuff from this era.
I mean, the guy I was in a band with also had the last name Davi, so it could be true. I never tested him on it, though. But that's the cast. That's who we're working with here in this movie that is really just about what if the Predator, but in a city? And in this case, it is the city of Los Angeles in 1997. Crime is running rampant through the streets. There are drug gangs and voodoo gangs and just a lot of gangs. And then there's also the police department, who all have laser sights now. That's how you know it's the future.
On their pistols, by the way.
On their pistols, on everything, their pistols.
Really.
Tony Hope, live with Hardcore. I'm seeing it in your face. It's like Dottie's hell down here. Smoke, fire, oppressive heat, as Colombian and Jamaican drug fiends once again transform the streets of L.A. into a slaughterhouse. Who the hell
gals in charge down here. The cops, they're outmanned, outgunned, and incompetent. Mr. Mayor, on vacation in your home in Lake Tahoe, get off your butt, get down here, and declare martial law!
The whole first, like, 20 minutes of this, I think, throws way too much at you right away, because, like, part of the fun of the first one is just, like, even just, like, the first 10 minutes of the first one, where it's like, oh, the helicopter ride and meeting up with Carl Weathers and everything. Like, there is a nice little build to it. And even then, like, you know, they go to war with that little village and stuff like that. Like, there's context at that point. This one, I felt like there was no context, and it was just, like, just shootouts in the streets constantly, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's not even a particularly great action sequence. Like, there are some moments in there, but a lot of it is kind of, like, shoddily shot, and, like, the bad guys are so fucking over-the-top bad guys that it loops around from cartoon back to just, like, something else entirely. I don't even know, just, man. Like,
I thought it was hilarious.
It's funny.
Two, like, Uzis in the air. Like,
yes.
Like,
dude, I mean, that's all Scorpio, though.
And then just, come and get it!
That's the part I was building to. I was going to say, even before that, like, they pull out a grenade launcher and, like, blow up a cop car with it and all basically start high-fiving
each other. Oh, my gosh.
But it was, yes, absolutely, when they run inside to get bigger guns and are just fucking, like, two-hand shoveling cocaine in their face.
That is one of three genuinely great moments in this entire movie, is that guy just fisting cocaine into his face.
So again, going into this movie with the foreknowledge that it was stupid,
deliberate.
Seeing that in the first 10 minutes, it's just like, all right, okay, I'll see.
You're in for a ride.
The one guy's got, like, his weed pouch, but it's full of cocaine, and he just shoves it in his face. Oh, my God.
And the whole, like, Jamaican voodoo gang thing is so, like, early GTA, like, GTA 1, where it's, like, even the car with, like, the zebra top and all the Christmas lights inside, it's like, oh, yeah, that's how you know it's one of the gang's cars. They all look like this. Like, felt very of its time.
It's the kind of thing that a video game company, if they tried that now, would have to apologize for after the fact.
Yes, there'd be a patch involved.
This whole game would have to be an apology. I mean, again, it is like RoboCop without the satire, but it is like...
But it thinks it has the satire.
I don't know how self-aware it is, but it is war on the streets, like actual war on the streets. And then the cops are losing people. The gangs are outgunning them. But then comes Danny Glover in, like, trousers and a sweaty shirt, who's gonna save the day. And I just don't know.
And
if Danny
trunk full of guns, his duffel bag full of guns.
And Danny Glover as an action star is a really interesting thing. I think it works in Lethal Weapon because Mel Gibson is the off the chain one, and he's and you know, Danny Glover is always about to retire. So Riggs is the wild one, and you know who's this character?
Murtaugh.
Yeah, Murtaugh. Is always like, what are you doing, Riggs? I'm fucking just trying to have a. I'm trying to sit on a toilet. Yeah, Riggs. I'm just trying.
Are those movies good?
Yeah, we watched the first
one and two. I think hold up still. Yeah, one and two are still very good.
Like all these movies, the first one, I think it has some commentary on, like, mental illness and, like, what, you know, what Riggs is going through and depression and his wife and there's a girlfriend. I can't remember his partner.
His wife is dead. Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of interesting in that part. And then they just go into, like, how can we escalate with a guy in an armored suit and the whole thing. But, like, but this just goes with Danny Glover as, like, well, I guess I've got the guns and a car that I need to knock the door off of and put bulletproof vests in. And it's just, it's too
very
much.
Silly. It's
that's
very
why,
silly.
That's the biggest thing that doesn't work for me in this movie is that, like, the whole idea of the Predator is that it just, like, scours the galaxy for the universe's greatest warriors to test itself in combat. And then it's like, in the first one, it makes sense. Like, Arnold is supposed to be, like, peak black ops military, like one of the greatest killers out there. And this is like, Danny Glover is a pretty good cop. You know?
Well, that's the thing is that Danny Glover is not the initial target. Like, here the Predator shows up and starts murking these, you know, Latin gang members and presumably has targeted them because they are, you know, violent and killing people and obviously therefore good prey for what they are going for. But then, you know, the Predator sees Danny Glover smoke the guy that was going to be his primary trophy, and he's like, oh, there's a better lion for me to go. Because again, as Gary Busey says, you're the lion.
That'd be okay. Fair, you know, like they say he's like the top guy on the force for like, you know, X, Y, and Z metrics of
but
a
compared
cop.
Compared to Arnold Schwarzenegger as military
it's a
black
different
ops
thing
guy.
Entirely, yeah.
But he's also a loose cannon and all the collateral damage and poor Danny Glover. And it's also very hot in LA. They don't touch on that particularly.
Man.
But like, you know, remember the first one, it's the hottest summers, right? Yeah, that's when the Predator would come. I don't think they explicitly say, right?
The characters never stop saying how hot it is at this particular week, but also like toward the end, I think in that government trailer, they'd say like, oh, it's drawn to heat and conflict.
Oh, do they say the heat?
They do say that.
Okay. They flat out say, yeah.
There's some fun stuff here, though, where it's like, you know, what could be doing this in a city? Like, when they're seeing the bodies hanging from the ceilings and stuff like that, like in the jungle, you know, they could at least, like, at times when they saw the skinned bodies and stuff, they're like, oh, what kind of fucking animal would do this? But then in the city, like, that mystery of, like, what is this? Who is skinning people and hanging them upside down? Like,
it's a voodoo
I like
gang.
That mystery.
Yeah, obviously it has to be the voodoo gang, because who else could it be?
It's clearly. Yeah. And then the the 80s-ness of this, like...
The late 80s-ness, specifically.
The early 90s, late 80s of the Police Station 2 with pictures of people doing the rotating head in the background. I don't know if you guys caught the, like, mug shots that are, like, just rotating 3D scans of heads to make sure we're a little bit in the future here. And the scene when they walk into the tracking shot or the, like, panning shot when they walk into the police station where it might as well just be Mad Gear Gang with mohawks headbutting people and
Streets of Rage.
That scene, that shot was like the most comic book of like, oh yeah, this is exactly how like, and you know, like an 80s fucking, I don't know, not a Batman, but you know what I mean? Like some kind of superhero movie in the 80s. This is exactly how they would set up what the precinct is like, right?
Totally. Yeah.
I think the most unbelievable vision of the future here is LA having like a good public transportation system by 1997.
Funny you mentioned that.
Was that just BART?
Well, no. So the LA Metro,
sure like BART.
The LA Metro is a real system. And the thing is, the one that they use here for the movie, it didn't exist yet. Like the LA Metro launched the year this movie came out. So they knew there would be a subway system, but it had not been fully built yet at the time they were filming. So
no one even uses it now, do they? Like, it sucks, right?
They do more so now. They made it better in the last, I'm going to say, like 5 to 6 years. Mm. They added more stops. They made it more viable. But yeah, I've actually taken the LA Metro. It is nowhere near the completely useless, like, 5 train stops it used to be.
Sure, yeah.
So in the police station is where... After the Predator has murdered some people and they don't know what's going on and Danny Boy finds his like weird spear gun tip, they go to the police station and that's where fucking Danny Glover, I just don't know about this role for him, has to give the speech to the kid who is Bill Paxton.
Who is not a kid, but there's nothing kid about even Bill at this era of Bill
Paxton.
He's
like 35 or something at this point.
This is what I call a speech, kid. It's the only one I got. I only give it once, so pay attention. Till now, it's all been fun and games, cops and robbers, Dunkin' Donuts. But you're in the shit now. Metro Command is a war zone.
Lieutenant, I paid my dues. I had to bust my ass to get my transfer.
And that scares the shit out of me, kid. No one requests to come down here unless they're looking for a reputation. There's no room for showboats or anyone looking to prove themselves. I won't stand for it. Now, don't get me wrong. We need good cops down here, and they say you're good at what you do. But the team comes first. You live by that, and you'll be okay. And we'll all be there for you. Remember, the door swings both ways. That's it. Hey, kid. Welcome to the war.
And he's such like a he's fucking he's the guy from Monkey Island, the car salesman guy in Monkey Island in this thing. He's Bill Paxton's character is so bad. I don't know if he's ever supposed to have a redemption arc. I think he's supposed to on the subway. I don't know if he does.
Like, isn't that him in True Lies? Isn't that him a lot?
Yeah, it is. But the thing is, one, and I don't even really like True Lies that much. His role in True Lies has so much more room to do stuff in sure. than this does. Every version of this character he has played in other movies is better than the one he has dealt here, because the movie can't even commit to whether he's actually a slime ball or just kind of, like, unctuous. Like, he's not, like, a guy who is just kind of
comes on a little too strong, but like he never really does anything other than just kind of act a little shitty.
Yeah, he just seems like a too horny dude. Like there's nothing that's like too bad that he
But
does.
All his police work is just kind of does it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a scummy bag of tricks, but then after he gets the speech, he abides by the speech and employs the tricks in the service of the team.
That's right.
Yes.
He gets on board as a team player.
Door swings both ways, apparently. So that speech with the lighting, the fucking Morticia Addams lighting across Danny Glover.
Let me tell you how it works.
Danny Glover is one of my favorite voices to try.
I love Danny Glover. Just like, but it's, you know, him doing the like, him being the gruff, tough action hero in this, it's just did not work for me the entire time. Unless we're doing a spoof of a movie where
it kind of is. But again, it's not committing to it in a way that makes you understand like what it is even specifically kind of spoofing. It is just, it is a generalized spoof of cop stuff from this era.
It's so bad. And then from then on, I mean, the helicopter lands in the middle of an L.A. street, and then Gary Busey gets out, and it's FBI or CIA guys all with the sunglasses, and they look like the guys from Close Encounters of the Third Kind with their jumpsuits and their sunglasses.
I think that's somewhat intentional, but yeah, so there is a government agency that is sniffing around that is trying to take over, like, they're presenting themselves as DEA agents because they're investigating, you know, these drug cartels, but in reality, they are up to some other stuff, and, you know, Harrigan sniffs out that there's something wrong here, that they're not just doing what they're saying they're doing. And he's determined to find out the real truth of what's going on.
Well, it feels very much too. We're talking about cliches, like the Die Hard thing where it's like, oh, the local cops are handling it, but oh, here comes the FBI. And oh, this is our jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. We're going to take over. And I feel like I've seen that a million times. Oh,
territorial pissing matches.
I was waiting for somebody to say jurisdiction, like in the actual movie. The Harrigan or Danny Glover's character is constantly flustered. He is constantly doing the Danny Glover. It might as well be Riggs doing something bananas the entire time. That's the same thing he's doing. What is going on here? Like, who is this guy? What is happening here? There's a skin person over here. I can't get my gun. I mean, like,
the things he's seeing are pretty fucked up, to be fair.
It's pretty bad. And nobody's really helping him at all. Like,
he's got like acrophobia, doesn't he? Like,
which only kind of comes into play at the end. They don't really get anywhere with it.
They set up so much stuff here, like Rookie the Kid Lone Ranger, who does nothing, like who really doesn't play out as any kind of like great cop who had to get assigned here because he's so good. He tails Gary Busey for a bit, pretends like he's got some Spy Kids gear that he can't use, and then dies on a subway in the most idiotic way possible. He's shooting down the length of the subway car with people going out behind him, hoping... I don't understand.
Are you telling me a real cop wouldn't do that?
No, but he can't... For some reason, when people shoot the Predator and it's right in front of him and he's cloaked, nothing happens. When Danny Glover shoots the Predator three times at the end, the dude goes down like a fucking wet blanket. Like, I don't understand.
He does get back up, but yes.
Well, he gets back up, but the bullets penetrate. So what's the difference?
It's like Ganon. It's like Ganon in the old Zeldas, where it's like if he's invisible, you can't hurt him. You got to light the torches, and if he's visible, then he takes damage from the arrows.
Well, it's also let's keep in mind here that this Predator definitely sprung for the upgrade package because his helmet can see more than just one spectrum of light. He's got the fucking boomerang disc shit.
Oh, that
the windjammer.
Cool.
The windjammer's got the Cyrax net. The Cyrax net is fucking awesome.
That's
he went
cool
for the
too.
Executive package on this hunting trip.
The spear, the extendo spear, right?
Yeah.
It was the GameStop pre-order bonus. Yeah.
Barely even uses the shoulder cannon in this movie.
No.
He uses it like
one guy with it real bad.
Yeah.
Hits him like right in the chest with a rock. Or something,
Still didn't get the waterproof package though. That's
they haven't figured out that yet.
It's the total signs alien thing where it's like you're these genius aliens, but you go to the water planet and then die or your ship breaks.
I'm not sure they are geniuses. I think they just, you know, they're technologically more advanced because they've probably been around longer than we are, and also they just really like hunting.
Yeah,
but they have interstellar travel and stuff like that. Like they're obviously smart.
Maybe they stole it.
But that's the thing. Like, we don't, I mean, the thing is, a dumb species can eventually invent something smart. It does happen.
I don't know.
They could have, like, maybe the, like, another advanced civilization crashed on their planet and they killed them, they hunted them, and then
they wouldn't know how to pilot it. Well, I mean, Will Smith learned how to do the alien spacecraft in Independence Day, so.
I mean, this guy does learn how to make bathroom tile into some kind of gel.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to picture this guy doing math. Let's say that.
Yeah, I mean.
I bet this guy was a real pill in algebra class.
He knows how to, like, record someone's voice and play it back as a wave through whatever fucking weird helmet speaker.
Want some candy?
Yeah. Want some candy?
Yeah. Oh, God.
The Predator cussing and saying fucking stuff is really dumb, I think.
So bad.
The part where he says motherfucker before like Danny Glover can even say it is one of the dumbest callbacks I've seen in any major sequel in a movie.
You are one ugly mother. Motherfucker.
I really hate when they have to redo a line. Like, there's no reason Danny Glover would say that line. I won't spoil anything, but Prey has a moment like that. Prey is really good, but there is a moment where it's like, okay, you're saying the line. Like, why would that character say the same thing, you know?
Why doesn't the kid get blown away by the Predator when the kid approaches, the want some candy kid, and he's got the
it's
he's
weak.
Got the
he
fake
can, it's
gun.
A little dumbass kid.
Well, he can see that the gun isn't real. Like,
is,
he has
is that
the
what it
vision.
Is?
Yeah.
There's no heat or anything. It zoomed in on it, and he was like, this isn't
real. Yeah, it zoomed in on it, so I thought it was like, I recognize this as a gun, and then he recognizes that it's not real. It's not a threat. Is that the...
It just showed, like, I think normally it shows things as, like, red and stuff. When he sees it as a threat, and it, like, locks in. This one, it was just kind of, like, cold and didn't lock on or anything.
Yeah, remember it was, like, established in the last one that he won't kill anybody who's not armed.
Yeah, but
or
she
apparently
had,
pregnant.
But he was,
if you're pregnant,
or
you
pregnant.
Won't kill you.
But I thought he was armed. I thought the kid was armed, but maybe he could see the orange tip on it. So maybe that...
That could be it.
Oh, yeah.
Or pregnant. What a dumb throwaway thing. Like, why is that even in there? Why even put that in there?
Because, okay, now, look, I understand the reasoning here is the idea that, you know, a hunter wouldn't kill a pregnant animal because that depletes the stock too much, and therefore, you know, that is not an adult animal that can grow up to eventually become prey. But... also, it's not really very well explained, and also is just kind of a dumb throwaway thing to throw in there.
There was no way that was intentional in the way they were thinking about it. You're thinking more about it than they were.
No, I think that's what they were thinking.
They just didn't know how to communicate it well.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. It was just poorly presented.
Yeah.
It's trying to make him more like, this is for sport. This isn't just killing. Yeah. This is, you know...
I mean, the main reason I would believe that is there is literally no other reason for them to drop that detail that she was pregnant other than that. Because, like, if otherwise, like, why in the world would they put that in there?
Yeah.
It's got to keep the population up. Otherwise, you know, no more trophies to hunt.
He's
a conservationist.
Yeah, that's true. He's got to keep the LA, you know, with huntable prey in it. I thought that the voodoo gang scene in that cocaine apartment building. Was pretty funny or fun.
Oh, where they descend on the leader of the Latin gang and decide that they're going to kill him and take his heart because they just decided that voodoo ritual would be really scary.
It's like they shot every scene and were like, do it again, but more cocaine. Like every scene, like even the intro sex scene on that is like, that lady's just like fly, like doing cartwheels, like flopping over.
It is very athletic sex.
It's just like,
you don't even see the guy laying down. You just hear it's like,
everything is
like, they might as well have just focused in on the boobs and had them make boing sounds as they went back and forth.
But then, so are you supposed to believe that the voodoo, like the voodoo gang doesn't really believe in the voodoo? Like,
that's kind of what they say.
Like, they're kind of laughing about it. They're like, ooh, voodoo ritual. Like, they were kind of making fun of it. Yeah.
Okay. King Willie seems on board.
King Willie.
He seems like a true believer.
Maybe he is the true spiritual leader of the various Jamaican gangs, but the other guys seem like they're mostly in it for the shock and awe factor.
Yes.
I think one of the coolest shots in the movie is King Willie when you hear the scream. You think you're going to see this fight scene between him and Predator, and it's just like, oh, nope, there's just a rubber head being carried away.
Yeah.
As bad as the stereotyping in this movie is, and it's fairly fucking bad, King Willie absolutely deserved to be a villain in a real movie and not a one-scene throwaway lore dump character.
Yeah, I was shocked when they killed him off right away.
Like, yeah.
He gets like 3 minutes of screen time. He gets the best line in the movie, the no killing what can't be killed.
They say you on top. They say you offering me favors. Tell me why, Babylon, Mr. Policeman.
I want some information.
Information?
about the one that's doing all the killing, Aya.
He killed your people. Now mine. I think you know who he is. I want him.
I don't know who he is, but I know where he is. The other side.
What are you talking about?
The spirit world, man. You see, it's always the same. There's no stopping what can't be stopped. No killing what can't be killed.
Hey, make sense, man.
This thing that's killing your people and mine is from the other side. I can feel him all around. You can't see the eyes of the demon until him come calling. This is Dreadman. Truly dread.
Which I mean, he owns this scene, and yeah. He's one of the—he's clearly trying way harder than the script deserves, and I'll give him that. And the costuming is pretty damn good, and that bit where, like, you know, you hear the brick come down and then like fall into the water, and he just like gets on alert—all that stuff is pretty good. And then yes, the shot of the head is great, but then everything, and then it just like okay, nothing that cool ever actually happens again in this movie.
Is it his head and spine that there is an incredible fucking shot of like? Predator like gargoyle perched on top of a building like screaming and holding up a head and a spine on a clock tower while like lightning strikes the Predator, right?
Yeah, or yes. It strikes right behind him.
Yeah, it looks fucking awesome. I remember seeing that part and being like, okay, all right, as dumb as this movie is, that's fucking sweet.
I can't remember if that is the unfortunate end that Danny Boy meets or if that is King Willy, but it is definitely one of those.
Yeah,
everything's so dumb about this movie. Like the fucking Predator get hit by that scene was dumb. Don't make
that's
it cool.
That's cool.
There's a part where Danny Glover and Bill Paxton are suddenly just wearing fedoras for the rest of the movie. Like,
was the style at the time.
Like, first half of the movie, they're not. And then suddenly they walk out of somewhere, and now we're just wearing fedoras all the time.
The Predator starts wearing a fedora at one point.
Look, this movie pre-visioned the swing revival of the late 90s. 1997, this is when the Cherry Pop and Daddies hit. This was the time.
The Boston's did the soundtrack. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's no reason. I mean, I like the King Willy stuff, but there's no reason Danny Glover's character should be meeting with the voodoo. Like, it just shouldn't work.
The reason they say he's meeting with him is that Danny Glover's the only one who believes that it's not the Jamaicans doing this. That especially after they find a bunch of the Jamaicans' bodies strung up in that penthouse apartment. And he's like, we need to find out what's going on. And then, you know, King Willy sends his fucking ganja squad out to bring him over. That is a great shot.
You want some ganja, man?
Why even ask someone if they want some ganja when the entire car is ganja? That is
just
a great
the door
fucking
and
level of
ganja.
Hotboxing taking place there.
Yes. It is astonishing.
Like I was waiting to see if Harrigan getting a massive contact high was going to be a factor in the next scene. You know what I mean?
That'd be kind of cool.
He does kind of stumble out of that car.
I was like, wait, is he going to be so stoned here that he's going to get fucked up because he can't like do anything? What's going on here?
He does kind of stumble out as he's walking into the alleyway like, oh, boy, I had too much.
Ridiculous plot point, but gets us the King Willy, which is good.
Yeah.
The Danny Boy getting murked when he's climbing on the ceiling to get the can opener.
Maybe
is
the most predictable thing I've ever seen in movie history.
Yeah.
Like the second that Harrigan is like, okay, just lay low. We're going to meet back here at 1 a.m. Take a look around. I was like, okay, well, he's dead. He's going to go in there by himself, even though Harrigan said not to, and then he's going to die.
Danny Boy.
Mike?
He's gonna die. It's all for just so he can get this piece of metal that they're gonna find out doesn't exist on Earth. And like, one of my favorite shots in cinema is when a guy creeps through an abandoned crime scene, where it's just, you know, creeping through the tape, you know, like kind of after the fact, like some detective skulking around. And it's a testament to how bad this movie is that I don't even think this is a particularly good scene. It's just it's a dumb, predictable death, and it's It's just one of many in this movie. Like, there's nothing in this movie that happens that is not particularly predictable.
The pathologist having the Insta find out any element, the spectrometer in her office room or whatever. Like, I mean, it's the future. Maybe all the pathologists can put in any metal into her device and be like, this is
what? You just put it in the microwave and it gives you a metallurgy analysis. Yeah, everyone knows that.
Man. The Harrigan, the only other note here really I have a couple more, but like, leaves just a police badge on the grave. Is that legal? Could you just take someone's police badge and just leave it open on a grave and walk away? Like, I understand you like Danny Boy, but that seems like a security issue. Don't like just leave that. You might as well leave his gun there.
Here's your
there.
Keys to the station. Yeah. Here's your gun.
Yes.
It's
the opposite of the I want your badge and your gun scene. Yeah. It is the, all right, here's your badge and here's your gun.
Just put it on your grave. Here you go.
Yeah, put it in the casket.
They kind of abruptly end all the gang stuff like a little over halfway through. Like after the King Willie stuff and everything, it's just like as soon as we start introducing the Gary Busey like bait room, it's just like a long stretch of just like guys sucking at trying to catch the predator.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, like about the time the fedoras happen, it's like when the gangs also stop. It's a subway. The subway scene is really the turning point.
And this is going to be the turning point of this podcast because we need to take a quick break. But I think the subway scene on is a good halfway demarcation line. So we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back. All right, we're back. The subway scene, folks. What do you got?
Nice strobe light in that subway.
Yeah.
Until they park and then it's lit the entire way down. I guess maybe the stations are lit. I don't know what's going on with the lighting in this. It is so hard to watch that scene from beginning to end.
Like, deeply incoherent.
Really burying the lead here of like gang harasses business nerd. nerd pulls out a gun.
Yes.
Gang is all like, oh, ours is bigger.
Oh my god.
Pulls out all their guns. And then commentary, every single like mild-mannered commuter on the train is also strapped.
Get it, Brad?
And they all pull out their guns. Yes.
It is the most attempt at a RoboCop thing that they do in this movie, and it is RoboCop 3 level missing. You didn't just miss the net, you threw it into the stands.
You brought
it's not anything.
Brought the basketball to a football game at that point.
Yeah.
I think the business guy actually gets shot by the passengers. If I can read the editing correctly in that weird scene.
Yes, he just gets shot in the dark at some point.
Yeah.
If you can read the editing in this scene, you are a fucking mystic, man, because this thing is so... I understand they're going for a disorienting kind of, you know, atmosphere here with the lights being out and going down the fast subway car while this invisible thing is killing people. But it just doesn't play at all. Like, it looks terrible.
It's
like the concept of that is terrifying, but again, they don't present it that way.
I don't really understand why the Predator attacked the subway car to begin with. Like, what was the goal? What was the intention here?
Well, there's after Bill Paxton? Hunting?
The implication seems to be that he was going after the gang members.
Yeah, he goes after the gang members first and kills all them directly.
What is Bill Paxton yelling at? Is it Leona?
Leona.
What is he yelling at Leona to do?
To get out and get the people out.
Why couldn't he also get the people out of there?
Somebody's got to keep the thing occupied. Right?
I think that was the idea. Distract was that he was going to keep it busy.
I thought she was going to decouple a car or something like that. Like, you know, she's like basically shoving people through the cars as Bill Paxton is firing at them. There just happens to be a predator in the way. But like, you know, it is. He deserved better.
Bill Paxton deserves better.
Not that character. Yeah.
No, but yeah, like the scene where he's shooting at him, and I can't tell if some of those bullets are landing or not, but it's just none of it is stopping him. And he throws a fucking golf ball at him because there's a throwaway bit about how his character likes golf. It's just.
Let's dance!
They keep talking about his, like, repertoire of tricks or whatever. I was waiting for that to be like an exploding golf ball or
some MacGyver thing.
It's my specialty.
It's just not inventive. This movie is not inventive enough for that.
These may be the tallest subway cars I've ever seen, but they're somehow hanging upside down in the subway car with their hands dangling down. Like, that's a nice tall subway car. I'll give it to them. But that's a lot of work for the Predator to have to go through to have to make a point. Like, dude, we get it. You just leave him on the ground. It's okay. Like, you don't have to have him bleed out in the subway car.
I assume he has some kind of bolt gun thing that he's just shooting into the ceiling. And then there's like an insta rope that fucking that ties him up. I don't know, man.
Is the idea that that's there to scare other prey? Or is that like to make it easier to skin, to eat the
skin?
It does
make it easier
to skin.
Why is
he doing that?
It does, but he doesn't skin the people in the subway is the thing. He doesn't have enough time.
He was in a hurry,
he just pulls some skulls out and runs.
Yeah, I thought it was like, like drain the blood out, like when you're like, you know,
beef jerky.
Yeah.
Like when you're slaughtering
meat.
Yeah.
Like when you're processing your prey or whatever, but like he's just doing it in a subway car. Like he doesn't know what else to do. I don't know. I killed all these people. I'll just put them on the ceiling. I'll get out of here. This Predator is kind of an idiot. I mean, maybe all Predators, maybe the one from Predator 1 was like, I'm good. And this kind of maybe ties into the ending here. I think this Predator first hunt doesn't really
know
what's going
on. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely a couple times was like, you know what, like the Predator in the first one is like cold and calculating and effective and like terrifying. And this one just seems like a dumb monster, like a rubber suit monster a lot of the time.
It was like his initiation into the Predator society.
Yeah,
because even at the end,
it.
All the other Predators are like, fuck that guy.
take
a gun, I don't know.
Some real dumbasses go out hunting. So
Well, that's the thing, though, is that, some real dumbasses go out hunting. But again, this Predator reads like a guy who basically like went shopping in the Sky Mall catalog for all his hunting gear. Like, he just bought everything. Because he's like, he's not actually there for the hunt. He's there to look cool and do cool shit with cool gear.
Right. He's like, he's got all the best, most expensive gear, but doesn't really know how to use it.
No.
Watched a YouTube video of how to like cauterize a wound by crushing subway tile. Tries it, but it doesn't really work.
Smash up a mirror and set it on fire in your arm.
This works.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because there's some good Gary Busey stuff before that scene, but I do love that scene. But yes, the thing we learn in the middle of all the subway nonsense and Bill Paxton getting killed and fucking, you know, Danny Glover chasing this guy around is that the Predator has been taking up residence inside a fucking meatpacking plant.
Mm-hmm.
And
the beef.
Yes. And he has developed a taste for beef. And Gary Busey and his squad are there to capture this thing. They've known about it since Dutch and crew came back, or, you know, what left of the crew came back and told them what was going on. So they've been hunting this thing for years. And they're ready. They want to pounce.
Yeah.
Some plan they have put together.
And I mean, it makes sense. It's like, we'll get our freezy guns. We'll go inside this cold thing and put on these suits, and then he can't see us. I like this setup. It's just like, it drags on way too long.
Gary Busey explains everything.
Yeah, I guess you're not wrong. Like, until the Predator starts flipping through, like, the little fucking...
It's Sam Fisher goggles that have three different filters, like, or whatever.
His little Viewmaster with different spectra on it, and until he can see it. Like, until that, I guess their plan was kind of working.
Okay. Here are two things about the plan that I feel like did not work at all. Mm-hmm. One, they said they sprayed dust all over everything to adhere to the Predator so they could see him.
It was like radioactive dust, I think,
Yeah, it didn't seem to work at all, unless that's what the tracking guy in the van is following. Is that what the... Because I thought it was dust that was supposed to be able to let them know where the Predators were.
It's supposed to cling to the Predator's camo.
Yeah, even if he was invisible, it would cover him with stuff and you'd see him. Yeah,
right, but only tracking guy in the van is like, all right, he's up on the second... Also... Like video game map, they need a 3D map because they clearly are like, he's right there in between you. He needed that like Metroid Prime tilt it to be like, oh shit, no, he's like a floor above you. Fuck. Okay. Next time.
Needs to have a red arrow up if it's on a different floor and down if it's.
Version 2.0 needs to have an elevation on it because that really messed them up. And the second thing is, they're fucking liquid nitrogen bullshit. What? The Predator is just always going to stand there and get frozen? Like,
it's like a flower. Do the demonstration.
What do you think was going to happen?
It is typical government hubris that you would think that everything would just kind of work out the way you planned it. And, you know, these guys definitely are like, nah, man, we spent so long planning for this, there's no way it can't work. And, you know, obviously at the time, they didn't know that this guy had the Viewmaster with multiple, you know, viewings and whatnot, but, you know, multiple spectrums, but... You know, when they bust out of there and they kind of look like an unholy combination of the alien space marines and Ghostbusters 2 era Ghostbusters, like, you can tell they have been practicing through this for a very long time, and they are so proud and so ready to do this. And it is the most set up for some guys to get murdered, like, just horrifically that you've ever seen.
Well, it makes sense, too, that they wouldn't know that he has the different filters, because if they were basing all their knowledge off of the events of the first movie,
right,
there was no indication there that he could see different spectrums, you know?
They should have just put mud all over themselves. And that's
that's the secret. Apparently, Dutch didn't teach him that one.
What is it? I like that they set up Gary Busey's character as, like, this guy was, like, fresh out of school, and, like, he was, like, 20, and then went into this thing, and he's, like, young, and he's hot, and doing this, and then when he's in the van, he's like, I've spent my whole life trying to, you know, get this guy. And it's like, dude, I think you're supposed to be, like,
you're like 30
or something. Right. Like, I don't know if that's playing for you. Also, what does he say? He's a fucking alien to Danny Glover's character.
A fucking,
I think,
a
space alien maybe?
Yeah, fucking alien.
That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien.
Man, I was so happy when he got got, but then
he got twice.
But then he got, what happens to him the second time?
So
he's cut in half.
He's cut in half.
Does the top of his body ever fall?
So that's a good question.
It's behind meat. It's behind.
I don't
meat.
Show it, but
okay.
But he's cut in half. Yeah.
You see, he can kind of definitely see, like, the waist down is all that's left there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that shot makes, okay. So the first time you think Gary Busey is dead, like, it literally, he's just hitting the jet burners that the fucking Predator has in his jump jets or whatever. Like, he launches, you know, a giant volley at Danny Glover, and the splashback is supposed to have burned him alive. And it kind of does, but then he comes back, he's going to be all heroic, he's going to let Danny Glover escape. And then he gets sliced in half by the guy's fucking alien Frisbee, boomerang thing.
Get out of here, Harrigan. I want to save your ass. This is between me and him.
And all you see is the legs of Gary Busey fall to the ground. What does happen to the upper torso? How does that stay in the air?
It's shot his hangy rope thing and already strung him up.
I thought it was going to fall, like, way late, but it never falls.
It's going to make the meat all dirty, but it hits the ground. He wanted to keep it preserved.
Maybe it's, like, riding on the boomerang. Maybe it took it with it. Like,
that could be. Yeah, sure. Sense, yeah, that's some real Mortal Kombat fatality physics, but I could see it.
Yeah. The Predator lays waste to those guys. Even Danny Glover's like, just turn your lights off, guys. Just turn your headlamps off. And they're like, what? And
get off the line.
Yeah, get off the line. Keep formation. This giant circle with a hole in the middle that the Predator just jumps into the middle of. And then they all, check your fire. And they're all just shooting each other. It's such a mess. Their little tinfoil suits all just crumple up. And I don't get it, but it's okay. Because then fucking Danny Glover runs in there, breathes in all this radioactive dust. Everybody else is in the chem suit.
He's
like,
fine.
He runs in there, is a mess, and then fights the Predator hand to hand. Okay, sure.
Wait, does he?
Well, he's got his little shotgun.
Yeah, there's the, I think the first thing is there's that whole exchange of him pumping
pumping
it full of shotgun slugs, which, like, how did it survive all that? It shot him, like, 5 times right in the chest and stomach.
They're tough as hell, man.
Is he fixing up? Because he fixes up his arm in that bathroom with the hand. He cauterizes
that.
That's
after, I think.
Does he also put it in the bullet hole stuff?
Yeah. He puts it in. Okay. He glops it in there. Yeah.
So he fixes himself
Although,
up.
I mean, like, cauterizing the surface of a, like, grievous chest wound doesn't really do much. But
that's the thing. At this point, whatever the anatomy is of these things, a grievous chest wound is nowhere near as grievous, apparently.
Maybe it's just a Krogan thing. Like, oh, he's got three hearts or whatever.
It doesn't even have to be that. It could just be a Michael Myers thing. It'd be like, this guy's a human, but also he can't die. Why?
Also, I love this exciting next 15 minutes of Danny Glover just, like, shimmying across roofs and jumping on pipes. It's like, is this the climax?
The pace gets a little weird and drawn out the last, like, 30, 45 minutes of this thing, for sure.
I mean, how are you going to take it up from when he reveals fucking the Predator face and has Danny Glover's key line that should have been on the title, which is...
Pussy face. Okay, pussy face.
Uh-huh.
Like, Arnold has, what are you? Danny Glover has,
what the hell are you?
To be fair, they do give Danny Glover also the "you are one ugly motherfucker" line.
Yes,
yes.
Well, part of it.
But,
yeah. Part of it. Gives the Predator the end.
Again, such a dumb callback.
So dumb.
And it's like the end's supposed to be like this thing where it's like, oh, remember we said he has acrophobia, and so here's him being scared on a roof. It's like, that is not a fun payoff for a climax.
No.
It's just seeing him be scared on rooftops.
It's weird. God,
I'm looking at it right now. Like, the amount of time that he just slowly creeps around this rooftop is like,
it's really boring and weird.
This is a movie that is barely an hour and 48 minutes start to finish.
Yeah.
And you spent like probably 10 minutes too long on this kind of boring buildup.
It's all that. There's the bit before he's really does the shimmying where like the Predator is dangling off the building, which is one of the worst shots I've ever seen of anything dangling off. Because you can almost see the crane bungee holding him up. And, you know, like, he pulls out the fucking, you know, he pulls the boomerang thing off the roof and slices the arm off, which is how the Predator falls into this apartment window that is occupied by every, like, elderly landlady in any movie ever.
Is the hair in curling irons at the point?
I believe so.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And as bad as that is, and as dumb, as goofy as the cauterizing the wound with glass and plaster in a sink using indeterminate chemicals and fire, as all that is, when he busts through the door, and then Danny Glover comes chasing after, him saying, you know, like, "I'm the police," and her just saying,
"I don't think he gives a shit."
That is a great line.
Good.
That is,
yeah,
I
that
give the movie credit, that is a great line and a great delivery.
Yes.
He just surrenders himself, puts the wrists out for the cuffs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were the authority around here.
Yeah.
God, that lady is another actor giving too much to this movie that does not deserve.
I wonder what happened to Harold or whatever, who was in the bedroom, who never
Harold!
Got out.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's in the bathroom.
This decimated bathroom.
Then
he chases down the hall and, like, kind of suffers like two different falls, or at least one that kind of seems like it should have killed him when he goes down this elevator shaft. I don't know. Like, they get very fast and loose with, like, I just look at it like he falls.
Yeah, he falls through like some weird hole in the ground that is at the bottom.
Yeah.
That's another thing. He tries to, we get the acrophobia again when he goes through the elevator shaft, and it's like, just call the damn elevator. Why does he decide to?
He's got
to
go fast, man.
Why did he just call
the
elevator?
Running away.
But then he gets chased by an elevator a foot and a half away from him as it's going down. Like,
you almost get Emilio Estevez in fucking Mission Impossible.
Just hit the elevator button and go. And he's like, but he takes his sweet gingerly time, like, oh, here we go again. I guess I got it. The only way down this elevator shaft, I guess, is to grab the elevator cables and try to slowly shimmy down instead of doing the thing. It's like trying to slowly go down a banister on a staircase instead of being like, I guess I could just walk down the stairs. No, I'll slowly. I gotta look cool
for this shit.
Yeah, and yeah, he falls like what seems like four stories into
falls
this thing.
Very long way twice, and seems fine when he lands on top of the UFO.
Which is
how is that supposed to be explained? As far as the UFO like tucking under a apartment building without anyone noticing?
Well, it's in a sewer.
Sewers?
Yeah, it flies out at the end, and it's some kind of like giant drainage tunnel or something.
Where did it get in?
Through that tunnel, I would assume.
Well,
maybe that would make some noise or shake a lot or something. I guess
it's L.A. Man, no one pays attention to anything.
Maybe they've got the same cloaking tech on the ship as on their suits, but then he goes inside, and it's like this bad H.R. Giger knockoff, like. Orange with this weird cathedral ceiling. Like, what is this shit?
And their trophy case.
Yeah,
that alien
skull on it.
The xenomorph thing. That is really cool. Like, because obviously there's a ton of lore now with like Alien versus Predator. But before this movie, was there ever acknowledgement that they, like, was there comic books or anything that acknowledged
them in the
same universe?
No, Alien versus Predator spawned basically out of people going apeshit for the fact that there was a xenomorph skull on that wall.
And
that is
I remember
so awesome,
that being.
Though.
So I remember only that. From this movie, basically, and being like, Alien or Predator 2 is so cool. The ending is so cool. So cool. And watching it again, it's all right. But like,
it's one of the better parts of the movie, I'll say.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it doesn't really go anywhere from there. It just
Not to be a purist, I was kind of bummed that it wasn't the actual alien skull from Alien, the first one. Because have you ever looked closely at that thing and realized there is a straight up human skull inside that dome.
Oh. Inside the xenomorph?
Go look up pictures of the original suit of the alien in Alien, the first one.
Oh no.
It's part of the you're talking about like behind the scenes stuff?
No, it's in the design, and like the part of the Giger design is like, you know, it's got the faceless, and that's what's supposed to be what's so scary about it is it has no eyes, you know, it's just this like featureless dome. That dome is actually translucent, and if you look closely, there is a fully realized human skull inside the head dome of the alien.
Oh, that's creepy as hell.
It is super fucked up when you go actually look at it.
What's the implication there?
Well, the implication is probably what they implied in Prometheus, which is to say that like the xenomorph ultimately takes the form to some degree of the biology of whatever it is its host was originally.
Yeah, I just visually though, like as terrifying as the xenomorph is already, when you see up close that there's like a straight up human skull looking at you from in there.
That's cool.
It's gross. Anyway, whatever. Yeah. They don't do that here.
No, they don't do that here. But also, the other thing I will say is it's different from, you know, the original Predator, where, you know, as soon as he takes that helmet off and everyone's kind of, you know, you see the face for the first time, it's kind of this really big dramatic moment. As soon as you get up close on this Predator, it is nowhere near as dramatic a thing and nowhere near as terrifying. Like, there's just something, I don't know if it's just the people operating the suit did not have quite the same, you know, rhythm for making face ticks happen and stuff. Like, it's just something about it feels very rubber suity here, whereas it did not feel as much that way in the first movie.
Wasn't it still Stan Winston, though?
Still Stan Winston is the thing.
Yeah,
I'm going to say the lighting and the shots in the first one were just much more composed. Like
more conducive.
Well, I think like they were shot to either hide something kind of Jaws style and make it seem scarier. But this is like, you know, I think they were maybe a little too confident in their puppetry in this one, where in Predator 1, you get that amazing shot. I think, Brad, you even mentioned it during the thing. You get these shots that seem like, wow, how'd they do this at the time, where it splays out its mandibles and all of this stuff. And this one seems like, okay, you guys have all the articulation, but none of the cinematography to make it seem scary.
I think in general, you see it way too much in this movie. You brought up Jaws, and like one of the things I love about Jaws, you don't see it for most of the fucking movie, and then even then, you barely see it, and it's always terrifying. And same with Predator. You know, you don't see that full shot of him much until the end. Here, you are seeing the Predator for most of the movie, and then at the end, numerous Predators. You're getting like too much of it, you know? Yeah. The mystery's kind of gone.
Yes, this definitely has the bad sequelitis of like things that were supposed to be like rare and like a huge reveal and a buildup in the first one are just like fucking everywhere. Every 5 minutes, it's like, oh, that shit's old hat. We're just going to do all of this constantly when it's like doing it all the time.
Not
makes
so good.
It less effective.
Well, do we know what else other skulls were in that thing? Is there some kind of like saber-toothed tiger?
There's some looking
T-Rex?
At the frame. There's like the gigantic like.
There's one that kind of looks like a Krogan.
I don't know what. Yeah, the one on the left is a giant skull. It's like the size of a small child. But
okay.
I don't.
It's the candy kid.
It's not super clear. I'm sure you could go find some breakdowns of people.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them might just be things they just made for this.
But I'm sure they're in some kind of universe now.
Yeah. But to your earlier point, you know, I think the big reveal here is supposed to be, what does the inside of the Predator ship look like? What is, you know, what do you kind of get from that? And I just don't think that reveal is as cool. It is one of the more interesting parts of the movie, but it is not really that exciting or intriguing of a reveal. I think the ship design is a little flat. And, you know, the bigger reveal here is that after they have their big knockdown dragout fight, which results in the single longest shot of a Predator screaming while dying you will ever see in your goddamn life.
Crazy how long.
It just goes. I will include the audio of this here because you will not believe how long this goes on for.
Also, I'm still like not quite sure how this happened. Like, Danny Glover's down.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seems dazed. Predator, like, he was moving in for the kill, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to figure out how
very
Danny
slowly
Glover
slowly moving in for the kill.
Harrigan actually gets the best of him. Was he just being arrogant and just like wound up for the kill, like wait a little too long?
I think
long?
So.
Okay.
That's what it seemed like. He seems like a really bad predator. Like he just exposes his entire belly while Danny Glover's still holding on to that razor disc, which he also put on his like belt or something. And I was like, man, you're going to lose a finger. You keep on messing around
with
that thing.
Yeah, you don't even know where the handle on that thing is.
Yeah, but like, yeah, like the Predator's just like, I'm just going to stretch out and reveal all my soft bits to you while you're on the floor. It's just bad.
Well,
I mean,
pursuant to that point that he may have been a very bad Predator, the other Predators show up after the Danny Glover thinks that he's felled the only one. A whole bunch of them come out of the mist, and they don't seem too bothered by the fact that he just smoked that guy.
I will say, as clownish as most of this movie is, like, my jaw actually dropped when they all started decloaking there. I was like, oh wow, he is ultra fucked.
Yep.
Like, wow, is this thing actually going to go for like a real downer ending?
It's at least a unique ending for a dumbass action movie, and it was just like kind of peaceful, like, okay, hey, we're impressed. All right, moving on your day. Yeah,
I figured like Predator would die, he would stumble out and drop a one liner, and that would be it, right? Mm-hmm. And then they all, granted, were they on green screen? Like, what is with
some
the,
of
like,
it is green not screen great. For sure.
Yeah. They look terrible. They look do not look like they exist in this shot.
But they had to build so many suits for this one. Well, they had this one shot, and then the music video, of course, they got some
of
use.
Course.
Out of
yes,
there, so,
the vital material.
Yeah, they don't look. Like, the compositing here is not great. I mean, decloaking is probably pretty tough of a shot back then, but it's very smoky in the room too. And then they haul the body out, right? They haul the body of Fred, their drunken hunting buddy out there. And like,
seriously, you did us a favor. This guy is a fucking...
He was
going to
embarrass us. Yeah, don't tell anyone that he sucked.
Idiot. Here, take this too. It's one of his fucking toys.
Here, you like Italian guns? Enjoy. I don't know.
here, you take this thing. He loved it. I don't know what it is. Just get off the ship. Also, we're leaving.
Yeah, I mean,
we're leaving
come
now,
with?
So
no?
You're
going
to have to sprint to get out of here.
Yeah.
Just go. Yeah, they don't seem... They seem completely nonplussed. They are just like, sure, whatever. Fucking LA sucks. Let's get out of here.
I don't even think they like prepare him for like burial or anything. They just kind of look at him and they're like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, and they just turn around.
Oh, they're dumping that guy in space the second they're they're out of orbit.
Somebody going to call his wife? I don't know. You do it.
I mean, dude. She'll be happier, honestly.
I didn't notice, so like, you know, they all decloak and drag the body away, except for the one. There's one which is unmasked from the beginning, which you kind of get the sense is maybe the leader.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed this movie is so dumb. I just noticed that Predator's like tentacle dreadlocks are grayish in color, as if to say,
"Oh, he's an elder predator.
He's the elder predator of the group."
Man. Look, there are two things that are like completely universal throughout the universe. Okay. You got two arms, two legs, and a face, and also you turn gray once you hit about 40.
You think those other predators were like sitting back laughing at this guy getting smoked?
They're watching
all
the monitors, security, and their Ring cameras for their ship.
Yeah,
fucking
exactly.
Weekend warriors, man. I'm telling you,
like watching the video when he was fighting the Gary Busey guys and being like, "Oh my gosh, he doesn't even see them. They're in the room.
Should we go in there and help him? Let Craig figure it out.
He's got to figure it out. Did he buy the? He bought the upgrade package with the infrared and the UV lighting. Just hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean. It's such a good concept. It's a little fumbled. It's still fun though. It's still a fun ending.
Also, they were glossing over the reveal here that the lead predator speaks English.
Wait, does he say something? I think
he says take
this,
it when he throws
it,
that right. when he throws this 300-year-old pistol at him.
He's been around.
He says take it.
Take it.
He's hunted here before, you know? He learned the language. Yeah.
And then, yes, it very conveniently has the number 1715 etched into the side of this old, like, flintlock-looking pistol.
I thought that was so cool, like, that reveal, like, at the time. Like, oh my gosh, they've been using these hunting grounds forever. The predators, like, what did their ship look like in the, like, 17? Like, was it made of wood and, like, did it come over? And, like, all that stuff was so cool when I was a kid and I saw this thing. It was rad. And then... And then I saw it as an adult, and I was like, this might be the worst 80s movie I have ever seen.
But, oh, okay, no. No. I'm going to stop you right there. I'm
really
going to show
bad.
You way worse 80s movies at some
but
point.
A lot of them are fun bad. This one's pretty bad. Also, I did remember this movie wrapping up without any kind of like a resolve, and this movie continues to wrap. And you know, 30 years later, yes, he stumbles out of the sewer, and that's basically the end of the movie. He's just like...
Well, no, he gives you the, you know... I think you'll get another chance.
Yes.
You know, when the government guys show up and they're like, we missed our chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were so close. And he looks at the pistol. He's like, oh, I think you'll get another chance.
Harrigan! What the fuck happened in there? Huh? God damn it. We came so close.
Don't worry, asshole. You'll get another chance.
I think they could have easily cut 20 minutes from this movie.
Absolutely.
You know, between him shimmying across rooftops at the end and like the super long like gang warfare stuff at the beginning, like it is longer than it needs to be at like sub an hour 50.
Even like the Predator like cauterizing its wounds and stuff takes forever, you know? Like a lot of that stuff just kind of drags.
It feels like it's emphasizing all the wrong things, which, you know, maybe it's doing just to kind of stretch out the length or something, because there really isn't that much movie here otherwise. And again, I think it is very funny that the movie ends with what is clearly supposed to be the sequel setup, and they don't make another one of these until 2010.
It's a very Mario Brothers movie where you're not going to believe what I found.
Like the Alien versus Predator movies came in between those, but like there was not a straight up Predator sequel until 2010.
You might be shocked to hear this one did not do as well at the box office as the first one.
It is still the lowest grossing of all the Predator movies.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so and I guess the Hulu one doesn't technically count since that's on Hulu, but like of the ones that have been in theaters, it is still the one that made the least money.
The Hulu one's surprising. The second best one.
Maybe not surprising. We didn't get a 3 after this one went the way it did. Like Prey, I haven't seen Prey, but it almost seems like it does follow straight from that concept with the pistol at the end of like, this has been going on here for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. I think the year is even right around there in the like early 1700s.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Prey is awesome.
I would like to see Prey. I think Predators is okay. I did not like The Predator.
I
didn't
see
watch
both
the whole
those.
Thing, but what I have seen of The Predator, I did not really like.
Is that the alien Adrian Brody one or the more kind of comedic?
That's Predators.
One? Predators is Brody, and the
that
Predators
one's okay.
More almost okay. I'm curious, and they're all on Hulu now, right?
I think so. Yeah,
yeah.
So who owns Predator?
Fox, now Disney.
Okay, Disney, and they own Aliens as well.
Yes.
Oh wow.
And they did it at the time, which is why the skull was able to appear in the movie.
Okay.
Fox owned both at the time.
Yes.
Right?
How many Aliens versus Predators movies have
there
been?
Two.
Two. Okay.
First one, and then Requiem.
Yeah.
So they are canonically in the same universe.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's literally in Predator 2, you see the Xenomorph skull. Like, I don't know how more in-universe that can be.
I bet Ridley Scott would disagree.
Okay.
Whatever,
sir.
You're saying we might see more Aliens and Predators movies, but not as many Predators and Aliens movies.
I'm saying that I think if those movies had been even marginally good, you would probably see them more like readily implemented in whatever other canon is going on, but both those movies are different kinds of very bad. Requiem has some good kills, but otherwise is pretty awful, and the first one is just boring, which that movie should not be.
Yeah. I never saw Requiem, but I heard it was gory and kind of fun, but I never wound up seeing it.
It's one of the worst lit movies I've ever seen in my life.
That is the thing I hear about it constantly is it's like so dark you can barely see it on home video.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's funny. I still think The Predator is an interesting like motion picture concept. I know there are comics, I know there are other things going on, but I think it's a kind of genre twisting thing of, oh, here is basically a Jason Voorhees from space, but you know, has its morals, let's say, or has its
a code,
right? So I think it's an interesting concept. I think this movie is terrible. I think Predator 1 is a much better movie. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. And I don't know where I really want to see Prey as well, because in thinking about what I would want to see from a Predator movie, it's probably more Predator 1. It's probably more just like people not knowing what's going on, a thing that has some weird code that they don't know. But, you know, loses a fair fight, if you want to call a coward's way of cloaking fair. But like, you know,
you're really hammering him on this cloaking shit.
I think it's such a cheap move.
Right. Could you beat a predator?
No, not with the cloaking.
Okay.
No, that's
okay,
what I'm saying.
Without the cloaking, do you think you could beat a predator?
Cloak, yeah.
You've got like a power saw or whatever's in your garage.
For how sporting the predators are supposedly shown to be, like the cloak seems like kind of cheating.
The cloak, I mean, clearly the cloak, okay. The predator takes out numbers of humans, and that's pretty tough. But it's got superior firepower for sure. Except the shotgun. Apparently, they weren't ready for a shotgun. So, like all the handgun bullets that are bouncing off of them the entire time, that's fine. And water. So, with a fire hose and a shotgun, yeah, a super soaker and a super soaker and a shotgun, that dude is toast. Clearly,
I'd watch that on Hulu.
Yeah. Like, get a fire hose, and one guy gets a shotgun, and, like, they're basically the or on a rainy day. Like, predator on a rainy day is a bad day. Maybe they come from a really arid planet. I don't know why he's in the jungle then. Anyway.
Yeah.
He likes it hot, baby.
He likes it hot. Brad, since you've now seen both these movies for the first time, pretty much back to back, I mean, you seem like you at least had a good time watching this one, if nothing else.
Yeah, I approached it. I met it on its own terms, which were not very demanding.
No.
It was very much just like, don't take this seriously and just treat it like a really stupid 80s action movie. And I was at least able to enjoy it.
Fair enough. Dan, did it meet your memory of what you thought? I mean, you said straight up this, you thought you had seen this movie, but maybe you actually had not seen all of this movie.
All the ending stuff that I definitely did see kind of held up. The ending I definitely remembered,
yeah.
And I still think parts of that are cool. Overall, I don't dislike this movie. I think on Letterboxd, I gave this one 3 out of 5. I gave Prey 4, and I gave the original 5. So
I think
3 out of 5
is pretty fucking generous for what this movie gives you.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, I don't hate it. There's fun stuff there. Anytime I see Bill Paxton, that's going to bump up my feeling of a movie. So, yeah.
It's tough to top the first. The first one is pretty good.
No Predator movie that I have ever seen has topped that first one, and I'm not sure that any ever will.
I have to see Prey.
Well,
yeah.
We'll watch it eventually. I mean, I'm definitely going to sit down and watch. I wanted to make sure I sat down and watched these before I watched Prey, because I kind of wanted to
refresh.
Have
none of you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Ooh, I'd love to hear what you think, because I was very impressed.
I will get to that one soon, I think.
It's an easy one. I'll say this, easy one to slot in on my list, which is just right at the bottom there.
In the overall rankings here?
Yeah, yeah. Predator 2, easy.
Oh, really?
Easy
you don't think it's better than Close Encounters?
It's a tough one. I mean, they both have aliens. They're very similar, but I'm gonna give Close Encounters because of the mashed potato mountain.
All right.
I think it really pulls it out, I think.
All right. Yeah, I think it's probably safe to say this one's on the bottom rung so far. But we have to round out the list with some not-so-great ones. Otherwise, you know, the great movies seem like they're bad on the list, and that's not how we're talking about them.
If you want a period piece for what the late 90s thought the early 90s thought the late 90s might be, because this thing has basically everything, but it's not played for satire. So, like, this just is distilled late 80s, early 90s, like war on drugs fear.
Yes.
Or what the current Midwest thinks New York and LA are like.
Totally
experience in Kansas. Yes.
The only way this could be more of a time capsule of this era is if you literally put Morton Downey Jr.'s skull into a time capsule. All right, folks. Well, that is Predator 2. We have done our Predator watching for this month. As I've mentioned before, I will just remind everyone, next month for the Halloween month, we're doing all movies. Star Trek will be taking a pause until November as we watch 5 films by one of my all-time favorite directors, John Carpenter. We will be watching some classics, a couple of my personal favorites, and we are going to have one in there that the users will be voting on. That one, that poll should already be up on the Patreon by this time. For which one will be the 5th of the 5 movies. But we will be leading things off next week's show with probably the most banger of all the movies that are going to be on this list, with 1981's The Thing. A movie that I think we have all seen. Brad, you said that you had not seen it in a very long time, right?
Maybe like 10 years or something.
Okay.
I think I've seen it a couple times. But
do for a refresh.
Happily watch it again.
Yeah. I love this goddamn movie. It is one of my favorites of all time.
I just gave 2 4K Blu-rays of that movie to Goodwill unopened because apparently every time it's on sale on like Wario or Kenja Deals, I'm like, ooh, the thing, I should get the 4K version. Uh-huh. And then I go to put it in the slot. It's like, oh, I have two other versions.
I started to do that, and then I made a spreadsheet of all my movies so that I knew if I already had a version of it or not, because I'm that kind of nerd. But yes, we'll be watching The Thing next, so prepare yourselves. The full schedule should be up on the Patreon by the time you are listening to this. As always, thank you, Dan Riker, for joining us on these two. It was nice having you.
It was a blast. Anytime. Love being here.
We'll find another one for you to come on sometime in the near future.
Anytime.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny. Thank you, everyone at home, for listening and for watching alongside us. We'll see you next time.